my circumstances forget it. Lord, adjust this plan. The history of magical love, you once mine. So everywhere I look, I find.
Hello. You are listening to CFRC Prison Radio here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Tonight we're going to talk about the prison farms. The federal government has recently announced that the prison farms here in Kingston will be reopened, but they have also simultaneously announced a partnership with Feihe, a Chinese baby formula corporation, which is currently building a baby formula factory here in Kingston. The plan is for the prison farms to reopen as a supplier for this large baby formula dairy factory. So clearly this is somewhat different from the prison farms as it existed in its previous incarnation, which, as far as we understand it, was at least to some extent an operation in which prisoners were able to produce food and dairy, which they could themselves consume inside. Since the closure of the farms, there have been a few developments, one of which is that most prisoners, as far as we know, are now eating pre-made meals, which are reheated and then served. So there is, in fact, no fresh milk and hardly any fresh vegetables on the inside. And the other thing that we think is somewhat relevant here is that since the closure of the prison farms, prisoner pay has been cut by 30%. So all prison work programs have changed in the sense that people are making even less than the extremely low wages they were already making before the farms closed. So in this new context, it's been 8 years. We're seeing what's looking like it's going to be a factory goat farm in which people will be making extremely low wages to produce extremely cheap dairy products for an extremely big baby formula corporation that will then sell its baby formula in China at an extremely high price. This is high-end baby formula using low-cost prison labor here in Canada. So tonight we're going to hear from a couple people who are critical of this development and critical, in fact, of the prison farms work program in general in various ways. First off, we'll have Calvin Neufeld of the campaign Evolve Our Prison Farms. He's advocating for a farm sanctuary involving animal therapy and a vegetable farm for food for prisoners on the inside. And second, we'll hear from Rico, who recently wrote an article posted online on the website North Shore Counter Info, where he sort of criticized the extreme corporatization of the farm and also the movement, the prison farms movement, the people who've been campaigning for the prison farms for calling this a victory when he sees it as not a victory at all. So we're going to hear both those interviews coming up. Before we get started with those, though, I just wanted to remind everyone that we're getting really close to August 10th, which is Prisoner Justice Day. As always, we will be doing a special broadcast here on CFRC Prison Radio on August 10th. We'll be broadcasting from 4 p.m. until 10 p.m. So if you or anyone you know would like to contribute to that show, if you have messages that you'd like to send, if you have statements you'd like to read, if you have things you'd like to add to our Prisoner Justice Day broadcast, or if you have information about what's going on inside any of our local institutions or any institution on August 10th that you would like to share on the broadcast for other incarcerated folks and their loved ones to hear, please get in touch. You can message us on Facebook. You can send us an email at cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net. You can call us, collect or otherwise, at 613-329-2693. Or if you act soon and there's still time, you can write to us at CPR, care of CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, K7L3N6. So again, if you have anything at all that you'd like to add or say for our August 10th special broadcast, It is the 10th annual special broadcast here on CFRC for Prisoner Justice Day, so it's an extra special year for us. Please get in touch, 613-329-2693, CPR, care of CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, K7L3N6. And here's that interview with Calvin Neufeld of Evolve Our Prison Farms.
Yeah, my name is Calvin Neufeld, and I'm the founder of Evolve Our Prison Farms.
Great. And tell me a bit about Evolve Our Prison Farms. What is that?
Well, it is a campaign. So it's sort of a grassroots community group and a national campaign advocating plant-based prison agriculture on our prison farms. And if animal therapy is a core benefit of the prison farm program, then we advocate a sanctuary model of prisoner animal therapy.
And how did your group get started?
Well, it began in 2016 when the government began its consultation process and feasibility study into, you know, the viability of reopening prison farms beginning in Kingston, Ontario. And they were actively seeking public input. So we said, oh, well, we have a really beautiful vision for what the prison farms can be, modeling environmental sustainability, promoting dietary health through the production of healthful plant-based foods, and sanctuary as a model of prisoner animal therapy, because this is a well-recognized model with tremendous therapeutic benefits. And we knew that if there were to be a return to the dairy operations of the past, that this would actually, in many ways, undermine the rehabilitative process, because there are many aspects to dairy that don't really get discussed in this dialogue. And we feel that the necessities of dairy, so inseminating animals, removing their babies, and then slaughtering animals at a young age, is not conducive to the goals of rehabilitation, and in fact puts prisoners at risk of trauma and emotional dissonance in their relationship with the animals, whereas a therapy model, a sanctuary model of animal therapy, would have all the benefits of the bonding and the empathy and the life skills and responsibility without involving prisoners in those conflicted relationships with animals.
And what piqued your interest specifically in the prison farms issue? Like, what sort of got you, drew your attention to that personally?
Well, you know, we live close by. I used to live, in fact, in an apartment building right next to Collins Bay Institution, so that was my view from my apartment. And I remember the cows being there, and I never really thought about it terribly. And then when the farms were being shut down, I saw the protests, I saw the people who really didn't like the idea of closing down this prison farm program. And indeed, the way that the Harper government went about it was really quite, I guess, underhanded and not transparent at all. The reasons they were giving for closing the farms just didn't add up. Really, it was more of a tough-on-crime kind of approach to prisons. And so there was a lot to stand up against. But now that the government wants to reopen prison farms, this is a blank slate. It's an opportunity to think, what would be the best agricultural model that we could be implementing, and what is the most effective form of rehabilitative programming involving animals? And we feel we had that vision, and so it was on our doorstep, and we thought we can be a voice for this better vision, and so we did, and we've been involved in this ever since, about 2 years now.
Great. Assuming my audience has never met an animal advocate before, tell me in the simplest possible terms what's wrong with animal agriculture.
Yes, a lot of people don't think about it, because we grow up thinking of it as quite natural. For myself, my awareness didn't grow until I was in my mid-20s. In fact, I was at university studying contemporary moral issues, ethics, and one of the topics that came up was vegetarianism, and all the arguments were laid out for the environment. We know animal agriculture is a top contributor to the most serious environmental problems. Dietary health, we know that animal foods actually contribute to a number of serious and preventable illnesses in humans, from diabetes to cancer to heart disease. And plant-based foods have the opposite effect. They are healthful and can actually reverse illness in humans. So all of the advantages on the side of plant-based agriculture and plant-based foods. But at the time, you know, I just thought, I just like to eat meat. And it was as simple as that. But then I started to think, okay, well, maybe I should at least look. If I'm going to eat meat, then at least I should look at where the meat comes from. So I did watch some videos, slaughterhouse videos, and it was truly traumatic. And from that point on, it wasn't a decision about what's right or what's wrong. It was, I don't want anything to do with this. I saw the violence that is involved in turning an animal into an edible product. So these are the things that we don't like to think about, but they are there. And so when it comes to a prisoner rehabilitation program, this is entirely separate from arguments around somebody's personal dietary choices or consumer choices or any of these things like that. This is about what constitutes effective rehabilitation. And if animal therapy is a core benefit of a therapeutic program like that, to have the animals being exploited and then slaughtered at the end of that process is undermines rehabilitation, and it's completely unnecessary. We can have all of the benefits, like I said, without these drawbacks. So the question then becomes, why is the entire conversation focused on dairy? Why is that the assumption that it will be dairy? There are endless possible models for these farms. So why dairy has become the default and why it has, in a sense, usurped the conversation entirely is a bit perplexing. And yet the more you learn about this prison farm story, the more you see that there's a lot more to it than just what's the best farm model, what's the best form of rehabilitation. In fact, there are politics involved. There's tremendous industry pressure and influence. So we're sort of the underdogs in this story, but we have really a really truly beautiful vision, which we have brought to the government's attention. We have campaigned, we have raised awareness nationally. There are thousands of Canadians who are behind us in this vision, and we will continue to advocate for what is best for prisoners, what is best for the animals, and what's best for the environment.
So several of the prisoners involved themselves in the campaign to restore the farms have actually framed the prison farms and its benefits more in terms of employability, job skills, and simply like wanting a work program where you get to like be outside, be with animals, rather than like in a hot kitchen at Boston Pizza, making chairs for Corcan, picking apples all day. But those are work programs and people get paid and they're also like gaining skills that they presumably would use in the workforce afterwards. Do you see your vision as at all compatible with that in terms of employability?
Absolutely.
Rather than rehabilitation?
Absolutely compatible, and in fact has significant advantages over, say, for example, a dairy model. So we know that when the farms were shut down, the Harper government, one of the reasons that they gave was that it didn't teach useful skills or that it didn't teach employable skills. So they said that very, very few prisoners who worked in the agricultural program went on to get jobs in agriculture, which, you know, in the farm's defense, people said it wasn't about so much getting a job in agriculture, but learning the life skills, learning the responsibility, and a lot of trade skills like welding and carpentry that can be applied in a farm context. So all of that remains true of a plant-based agricultural model. And in fact, the dairy industry is becoming increasingly automated, so jobs are disappearing. It's machines that do most of the work. And margins on dairy farms are very, very small. It's hard to make money. So hiring staff onto farms is something that a lot of farmers just aren't in a position to do. So realistically, we're not training prisoners to become dairy farmers, right? We're trying to teach prisoners responsibility, life skills, and hopefully develop empathy and compassion and so that they can come out of the prison a more wholesome, you know, a human being with a healthier mindset and a healthier attitude towards work and towards others and towards life. And all of these can be taught through innovative plant-based agriculture. And in fact, if we use the prison farms to model the cutting-edge techniques, green technologies, green agricultural practices through labor-intensive organic operations, permaculture, greenhouses, we can actually train prisoners in value-added agricultural skills, so that when they do go out, they would have a better chance because they are bringing something to a farm operation that somebody who just has everyday farm experience wouldn't have those value-added skills. So in terms of agricultural employment, we would be doing a better service to prisoners by training them in cutting-edge techniques and technologies. And then meanwhile, caring for the animals, working outdoors, if there's animals in a sanctuary setting, and sanctuary means it's the permanent, non-exploitative care of animals. So they are there to live out their lives, and they would contribute natural fertilizers to the farms, and it would just be sort of a nice integrated system. But the prisoners could bond and grow to love and care for these animals, and it's a year-round responsibility no matter what, whether they're being milked or whether you're simply caring for them. It's a year-round responsibility. And that care would not have to end at the end of the animal's milk productivity. It would just purely be for the sake of valuing life and learning that responsibility and bonding and not having to break those bonds at the end of that process. Forming trust with an animal without having to break that trust at the end of that process. Those would be the wrong things. To ask prisoners to form bonds and break bonds and form trust and break trust, that's the wrong lessons to be teaching prisoners through a rehabilitation program. And it's completely unnecessary.
Do you think the guys inside could still get paid?
Well, yes. I mean, if they'd be working on the farms or working on a dairy farm or working, you know, in the fields, they're still getting paid. Very small amount of money, almost insignificant. So that's a whole other issue in itself regarding prisoner pay. But any employment through the CORCAN program, they would receive some financial compensation.
So obviously you've heard the news that the restoration mm-hmm. of the farms is going to be tied pretty integrally with this baby formula factory that's also opening in town. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, it really looks like CSC and CORCAN are trying to create like a profitable model mm-hmm. for the prison farms, like use prison labor to produce, you know, dairy that would be for market rather than for drinking inside.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts particularly on that development?
Oh, many, many thoughts. It's very disconcerting. So the prison farms in the past, they were sort of some plant-based agriculture, crops, which fed cows, and the cows were converted into milk and meat for prisoner consumption. And they had their own dairy processing equipment, so they literally made the milk on site, served it into prisons in Kingston, and distributed to other prisons as well. That's not what this model is. So the people, the good people who have fought all this time to save the prison farms, we're fighting for prison farms as they were. What the government is doing now is not that. It is very different, and it's surprising that the critical questions are not being asked. This is the first time that a prisoner rehabilitation farm program is going to be used to produce foods for outside sale. That has never happened before. And not only for outside sale now, but to be processed and shipped to China as baby formula. So the government is putting in it'll be up to 1,500 goats at Joyceville Institution, and now 60 cows as well, because people were upset that it was goat dairy, not cow dairy, so the government has sort of bent over backwards to find out, okay, how can we fit some cows into this as well? And they had to go and make a special arrangement with the Dairy Farmers of Ontario to purchase some special category of research quota to get around the quota restriction so it doesn't compete with farmer quotas. It's all very complicated. But they've bent over backwards to make that possible in response to the frustrations of a handful of people. Meanwhile, they have not addressed our concerns or the issues that we have raised or acknowledged our frustrations over being erased from the dialogue and from this process. And the concerns that we have are not nothing. These are significant concerns regarding the impact it will have on prisoners to be involved in that kind of a relationship with animals. And on that scale, the farms in the past at their peak had 300 cows. Now we're looking at over 1,500 animals. The individual bonding will just not be possible with those numbers. And goats tend to have 2 to 3 kids per birth. There'll be that many more babies born. And, of course, the males will pretty much go off to slaughter shortly after, you know, being born. They don't have very much time at all. They are just converted into meat because they are an economic drain to a dairy operation. So a lot of grieving mothers, a lot of slaughtered infants, and it's mind-boggling. These are the parts of a dairy operation that people don't talk about, and they don't want to talk about. It is uncomfortable, but we have to have these difficult conversations because this is prisoner rehabilitation. This is about prisoners and about creating healthier people coming out of the prison system. So the idea that now prisoner labor is going to be used to produce baby formula for China is going to be going to the Feihe International Infant Formula Factory, which is under construction, as you mentioned, in Kingston. The construction began around the same time as the government launched its public consultation process into reopening the farms, and the construction will be completed as the farm operations are set to go and to be put into operation. So it's impossible to ignore the connection. And this raises serious questions about the ethics of prison labor, to say the very least. And we know that prisoners don't want it. We have spoken with prisoners. We did an informal survey of prisoners at Joyceful Institution, and about three quarters of them voted for plant-based agriculture and or sanctuary as their preferred model. Many of them expressed explicitly that they do not want to be involved in a dairy operation. They don't want to be involved in anything to do with even the slaughter process of animals. And we've brought their voices to the government, and that has not been addressed or acknowledged either. We have experts in law, in criminology, in climate change, in animal and interpersonal abuse, all of whom have spoken out against this model, saying this is not a model of animal therapy. So that's the question. Is it okay for prisoners to be involved in inseminating animals? Is it okay for prisoners to separate infants from their mothers? Is it okay for prisoners to ship animals off to slaughter? And is it okay to call that arrangement a rehabilitation program? And is it okay to call that animal therapy? And is it okay to do all of that to sell baby formula to China? Our answer to all of these questions is a resounding no.
So what's your strategy? How are you hoping to implement this vision that you have?
Well, we have done a great deal over the past 2 years. We have submitted two petitions already, and we are about to launch a third petition in light of the government's announcement. So we are calling on the government to reverse this decision, to prioritize a prison farm program that upholds environmental justice and climate change solutions, modeling climate change solutions, which is one of our government's stated priorities, and to prevent use of animals in rehabilitation programs except under animal therapy models, which really just makes sense. In no other circumstance would animals be involved in a therapy program and slaughtered at the end of it. That just doesn't happen. But because this is in the context of a food product, we don't tend to think of food animals as having those same rights and the right to their bodies and the right to their lives that we would apply to any other category of animal, especially in a rehabilitative and therapeutic context. So our first petition had 13,000 signatures. Our next petition was submitted in the House of Commons in May, and we are about to launch our next petition that will be sponsored by Green Party leader Elizabeth May. And so that will be set to go soon. And like I've said, we've also collected statements from experts in a wide range of fields. We have spoken with prisoners and not only done a survey, but talked to them and heard their stories and their experiences. And there are traumas associated with this kind of a program. Now, the prisoners who have spoken out in favor of the former farms have spoken to the bonding experiences. So it's not to say that they will have no benefits with the dairy operation, but all of those benefits are the good times, the good moments. When everything's going well, when they're bonding with the animal, and then we tend to shut out of our consciousness the difficult times and the traumatic experiences, complications in birth, which are quite common. Infants can die, mothers can die as a result of a difficult birth, and just having to put those animals on the truck to go off to slaughter. Or at Joyceville, they have a slaughterhouse on site where prisoners are trained in slaughtering, well, in butchering animals. We've been told that a staff has to use the bolt gun, but that prisoners use knives and butcher the bodies, hang the carcasses and butcher them. And often it is that the bleeding out of the animal that actually kills the animal. So prisoners are involved in killing. And how the government justifies this is anybody's guess. Unfortunately, it's a profitable program. That slaughterhouse services hundreds of local farms, and they do make money. So when the prison farms were shut down, the government explicitly protected the slaughterhouse because it makes money. And I know that they are keeping the slaughterhouse separate from the prison farm program, so the animals involved in the prison farms will be shipped out, sold out, which still means slaughter for them. And the prisoners are still involved. If you send somebody off knowing they're going to die, you are part of that process. A sanctuary model exists for its own sake, and the therapy is there for its own sake. And, you know, we spoke with a prisoner at Collins Bay Institution, the chair of the inmate committee there, and, you know, his attitude was that for prisoners, they don't really care. We were a bit surprised to learn that, but he said they don't really care. Why? He said most prisoners, their attitude is, well, what's in it for me? Why do I get up at 4:30 in the morning, work all day really hard, build up a huge appetite for what amounts to a dollar or two a day, and not even enough money to buy extra food to make up for my extra appetite from all that hard work to what? To make money for the man kind of thing? So there's a lot of apathy on the part of prisoners. Whereas a sanctuary model, it exists for its own sake, and you go and you do the work. I mean, you work in the fields to get out and enjoy that and to be contributing food to feed yourself and your fellow inmates, not to feed a baby in China. So it's just this plan that is being implemented by the government just has nothing to do with rehabilitation. And yet that's how they're painting it. They're saying that this is emphasizing rehabilitation through animal therapy. And so we have to stand up against that and call them on it and not get so so eager just to see the farms come back that we will accept any model. No. We expect the best. And when we've never met with Minister Goodale. He refuses to meet with us. But we have met in 2017 with his policy advisor, Justine Villeneuve, who is no longer in that position. We presented our proposal to her, as well as to many others in the government. And she said this is exactly the kind of model that our government wants to be looking at. She said our government doesn't want just any old farm model. They want the best possible model for the prison farms. Well, this is not it. What the government is doing is not it. That is not the best that Canada can do. It's an embarrassment, and it's outrageous. So we just feel that we need to stand up for justice, and we want to tap into that prisoner apathy, because they deserve better than this. And they shouldn't have to just accept any old program just for an excuse to maybe get out of their cell a little bit. They need to know what's happening and how they're being used to advance commercial interest and foreign economic interests as well. This has nothing to do with them or what's good for them. So they have the right to be outraged by this as much as we are, more than we are, because this is all about them. It has nothing to do with me or anybody outside. This is all about the prisoners. So we are calling for prisoner non-participation in the prison farm program until it is a program that does not exploit anybody. Prisoners have the right to not be exploited. They have the right to not exploit others. They have the right to not be violent. And they have the right to uncompromised bonding, trust, and affection.
If people are hearing this on the radio and they want to help or get involved, how can they find you? Or what kind of things do you have coming up that they might be able to plug into?
Yes. Well, you know, a good place to start is our website, evolveourprisonfarms.ca. We are also on Facebook at Evolve Our Prison Farms. That's where most of our activity takes place, in the Facebook. So do like us on Facebook, join in the conversation, and watch this story unfold. It literally unfolds daily by the day. And we are going to be launching, now we're going to be holding weekly vigils. So as of, I believe, next week, we're going to begin. It'll probably be Wednesday evenings from 5 to 6 p.m. outside of Joyceville Institution. And we are going to be there every week, whether it's 2 people or 20 people. We will be there and have that presence and be visible. Because the media is not touching us any more than the government is. They don't know how to have this conversation. And it is a difficult conversation to have. And we need to make it very, very clear that this is not in opposition to the dairy industry or to dairy farmers. It has nothing to do with farmers. or with an industry. This is all about rehabilitation and what is best and what is right and what justice truly looks like. And that's what we have to stand up for here. Whatever your position, anybody can recognize that what the government's doing with this massive goat dairy operation to produce Chinese infant formula has nothing to do with what people have been standing up for and fighting to protect.
My name is Rico. I am an anarchist in Kingston, involved with End the Prison Industrial Complex, and was around for the Prison Farms campaign in 2009 and 2010.
And what was your involvement or relationship with the Prison Farms campaign?
So I guess we kind of joined the campaign, a group of us who were working together as anarchists and wanted to start a project that focused on the prisons and their presence in the Kingston area. And we noticed that there was a public meeting called at Frontenac High School. And one of the signs said, "Stop Super Prisons." And we hadn't heard about this, so we showed up and saw that there were several hundred people who showed up, learned about the Prison Farms campaign from the organizers of that meeting, and then decided to try to plug into that structure.
And what made you want to be involved with the Prison Farms campaign? What sort of aspect of that spoke to you?
It spoke to me on a couple of levels. The first level was that it was a project in Kingston that was happening that was critical of prisons, and it seemed to be an angle at which to sort of get at what was a coming prison expansion and a general tough-on-crime agenda that was happening at the time, as there was the Harper government was in power. Also, just the sheer number of people who were getting involved with the campaign was very inspiring. It's very rare to see that in Kingston. It's almost the only thing since I've lived here for about 14 years, and it's the only thing I've seen in those 14 years that I would maybe call a social movement. Something was going on that was important, and we wanted to respect that and relate to that and also push it in a direction that would make connections with other things happening in town.
And in what ways did you end up being involved with that campaign as it moved forward?
So me personally, I personally was involved on a number of different levels. I co-authored a zine called Super Prisons, What They Are and How to Stop Them, which was a collaborative zine that a couple of us wrote that tried to tie in the Prison Farms closure with the general Harper agenda and what we uncovered in our research in terms of a plan. It was called the Roadmap to Strengthening Public Safety that would see a massive prison expansion and a general kind of tough on crime agenda implemented in the prisons. So there had been a review that had, you know, authored this document, a government review. And so this is what we foresaw. So we tried to make that link, as well as at the time, we were interested in calling for a sort of coalitional social movement against the Harper government, similar to what happened in Ontario under the Mike Harris regime. And actually, a lot of the Mike Harris people were involved with that incarnation of the Harper government. So that was kind of our first intervention into that campaign. I went to a few of the meetings that were kind of the Save Our Prison Farms committee. I think we were also just bringing a radical voice to that table. And also, there was a whole separate group of us, mostly anarchists and prison abolitionists, who were meeting separately to try to build up a prison abolition perspective to bring to that campaign, because mostly the campaign was very focused on the specifics of the prison farm and the value of farming and the importance of the cows and why the Stephen Harper government is bad. And we wanted to bring a more radical perspective that called into question prisons themselves, government itself. Yeah, we had some skills to do with organizing direct action, and the campaign was definitely going in a direction where people were openly calling for nonviolent civil disobedience. So we wanted to help train people. We had some skills in that respect, so we wanted to train people to basically do that more effectively. So if you're going to get arrested anyway, you might as well make it so that you're locking yourself to something and it takes them some amount of time to arrest you or that kind of stuff.
And what were you hoping to accomplish by being involved with that campaign?
I think it's easy to say something really coherent in retrospect about that, but I think at the time, you know, to some extent we were just caught up in the excitement of something big was happening in Kingston, and this is a quiet town, and we wanted to be involved, and we wanted to maintain our politics and bring our politics to that group, but still respect that something was really happening that seemed really important and rare here. It wasn't completely thought through. I think it developed. But I think our hope was basically we wanted people to win, for one. We wanted people to win with direct action and to demonstrate the power of direct action. And we wanted to be a part of a conversation about prisons in Kingston where we could develop a prison abolition position in this town.
And did those things happen, in your view?
So I think the conversation about prison abolition and the staking out of a position against prison definitely did happen. I think even within the campaign, people from this group became End the Prison Industrial Complex. I think the first time we gave it that name was just a title for the zine. And we were invited to speak at some of the Prison Farms events. So somebody spoke at one of the public town hall kind of meetings that they did and spoke about prison abolition. So we definitely put those ideas out there, and I think that had some lasting impact. Also, the group and the prison industrial complex came out of that period and still continues to organize against prison and has, I think, staked out a position against prison in town that people can find and is intelligible to people who want to understand it. So I think that was definitely successful. The campaign, it depends what you call victory. I would say the direct action in the campaign did not accomplish what it set out to accomplish. I don't think the goal was to create a spectacle of symbolic arrests. At least nobody really stated it that way. I think the goal was to actually prevent the cattle from being removed from Collins Bay Prison, or Frontenac as it was called at the time. And there were 2 days of blockades when they brought the cattle trucks in. The first day was, I would call, a resounding success in that there were some arrests, but the police were basically overwhelmed and unsure of what to do. And then, I don't know how much you want me to go into everything that happened, but basically the blockade was taken down overnight after some negotiation with the police and some kind of discussions within the crowd that not everybody was super happy about how that went. And when we showed up the next morning to resume the blockade, the police had fortified the entrance to the prison and made it very difficult to get onto the road. And they had a lot of extra outside police that they'd brought in. And they basically had taken off the quote-unquote kid gloves and were kind of making examples of anybody who tried to get in the way by roughly and violently arresting those people. And were successful in removing the cattle and sending them to auction. So on the level of did people physically with their bodies using direct action stop the farm from being closed, I would say no, that was a failure. The campaign has won a political victory to some extent at this point, but personally as an anarchist, I was never interested in winning a political victory because I think, first of all, it's a victory that doesn't really move us any closer to a world without prisons or a world without capitalism or a world without state power. I think it solidifies a certain position of power for the Liberal Party among certain groups of people. And second of all, even the new farm looks like a more neoliberal kind of farm. And some of the things that I can appreciate about the prison farm program, despite being against prison, one of them is that people are growing food that they're then going to eat that is like good quality, healthy food and dairy. And it looks like, at least with the dairy, it's all going to be sent to a milk processing plant that's producing baby formula for Chinese market, and it's going to be exported. So it's really just become this mechanism in a global supply chain, global capitalist supply chain, and prisoners just become cheap labor at that point. So I really don't see the value in that. And people are still complaining about the very low quality food, which has gotten worse over the last 10 years. So it does nothing to address kind of that.
Do you think that the reopening of the farms, even as a factory, mainly goat farm, mainly to produce baby formula for China, is a victory for the prison farms campaign?
You would have to ask the prison farms people that. I don't consider myself a part of the prison farms campaign anymore. I think it's been a long time since I parted ways in terms of being involved with that campaign. I think publicly they're certainly claiming it as a victory. I think there's a public celebration called for next month. I mean, that campaign is a large campaign with a large number of individuals with a diverse spectrum of politics, and I'm sure some of the people in that campaign feel mixed feelings about what's happened. And I can only assume that they're claiming this as a victory because they want to give people a victory. It was like important to have some kind of victory come out of this, even if it's not perfect. So I can imagine the perspective that puts this as a victory for them, but I can only speak for myself and from my perspective. And from my perspective, this is closure for what has been a really long campaign that has become very narrowly focused on a very specific thing, and the sort of connection to other prison stuff going on in town has somewhat faded anyway. So to me, it's kind of just closure for this period where everybody is very, very focused on the prison farms.
It's been quite a while since that blockade. What has your relationship been like in the interim with people involved in the prison farms campaign?
I would say there's some really good people involved with that campaign who are very well-intentioned. And I largely respect the people who are involved with the leadership of the prison farms campaign and have personal relationships with several of them. I mean, some of them are more just kind of social democrats, actually, with politically. Some of them are radicals. And I disagree in terms of the political direction from the point forward where the campaign became about pressuring opposition politicians to agree to reopen the farm if they got into power. Like the moment that the campaign became about persuading politicians to restore the program became the point at which I became not really interested in it anymore. And I've always been interested in the people who came out and participated and showed up and put their bodies in the line and took risks. And that includes people in the leadership of the campaign. But that's true of anything really that happens in the city where people are speaking out and taking risks. I'm generally interested in that kind of activity and want to find those people and see if there's ways in which we can work together.
Do you think the Prison Farms program was a good program?
I think the Prison Farms program, I don't know a lot about the history of the program. I kind of hesitate to answer the question of whether a program is a good program or a bad program. I think prison programs are always going to exist because they fit into the logic of prison in some way. Like they're serving some kind of function of within the correctional apparatus. And so, yeah, I'm glad if people are able to have some relief from the misery that is being locked in your cell all day. But I'm not one to enthusiastically put a lot of energy into trying to get more programs like that for prisoners, because I think they also serve a function in the correctional apparatus. Like, it's a work program, and people are doing it for wages that have been cut 30% in the last 4 years. And there's been a struggle inside for better working conditions and wages among prisoner workers, and I'm much more interested in supporting that kind of collective struggle among prisoners for better conditions than, you know, what was oftentimes a really paternalistic campaign that, you know, the slogan of the prison farms campaign was paying their way through agriculture. So it absolutely leaves intact the idea that prisoners are people who have done wrong and who have to make it right through doing their time. And if agriculture is one way, like the hard work and the, you know, the farm, like the work ethic of the farmer or whatever is something that is inherently good, as an anti-capitalist, as somebody who thinks that productivity is not just inherently good, I don't agree with that. People aren't just meant to produce value for the economy. I appreciate people who contribute to their community, but I think that's a different thing than the Protestant work ethic.
If you could do it again, if this campaign came up again, would you still get involved?
I mean, I guess it would depend on what it looked like. If it looked like a grassroots campaign of people who were discussing using direct action to save the farms again, like if the government goes to close the farms and the campaign restarts, I would get involved again. I would do it somewhat differently. I would advocate for radicals to have a much more independent position and a more critical position throughout that campaign, and expect that, you know, within a coalition, you're always going to have disagreements, and sometimes you have to forge ahead with what you want to do, even if people are going to be unhappy about that. Because in the Prison Farms campaign, there were several moments at which the anarchists and the radicals had come up with an idea for how to support the campaign in a way that we thought was a good idea. And it made people who were in the leadership of that campaign uncomfortable, or thought that maybe it was too militant, or there'd be arrests that they hadn't planned on. And so we backed away from those ideas more often than not. And yeah, it's good to get feedback like that and to take that into account. But there are things that I think we could have done that we didn't do because we didn't want to upset the rest of that coalition. But I think we can just be clear and respectful about what we're doing and still do those things on our own.
I mean, it kind of sounds like you never wanted the prison farms to be reopened. Or, like, it didn't really matter whether that happened. It mattered more, like, how it happened. Would you get yourself involved with any campaign, again, that has goals that are actually not goals that you share?
I mean, I never thought it would be a bad thing if the prison farms reopened. I just thought it would be a good thing if the way that it happened was through people power and direct action. So, yeah, I would do it again if... If the goal was something I disagreed with and thought was bad, I wouldn't do it. But I never thought the prison farm program was bad. I think it's not inherently great. I think there's things to question about it. But it seemed to be a popular program among prisoners. It seemed to have certain things that were, like, good about it. And, yeah, so, I mean, I would do that again. I would just continue to push a prison abolition position within that framework, and try to continuously tie that into the broader goals of freedom for prisoners and anti-capitalist struggle.
Is a factory goat farm a bad goal?
Yes. A factory goat farm is a bad goal, and I am against it.
And
would support a struggle against
it. And what are the main differences for you between the outcome that has happened, which is this factory goat farm with some cows, and the program that existed before?
For me, the main difference is what, like, the products that are being produced on the prison farm, where are they going and what are they for? And if they're for some link in the global capitalist supply chain, and they're for having a cheap labor force to produce something for a global corporation, it's a pretty obvious relationship of exploitation. Whereas if the goal is you know, it's a program at a minimum, in a minimum security environment that produces food for people to eat inside, and they have better food as a result, and they get to go outside and work with animals in the meantime. I think there's a big difference there. But I also not, I do not have a fundamental political disagreement with any kind of animal exploitation. And if I was, you know, fundamentally against using animals for food, for example, then, you know, I would be against that. But that's not my position.
So we're also talking to someone from the campaign Evolve Our Prison Farms. They're advocating for a, if there's going to be a prison farm, that that prison farm be in part a vegetable farm for food for the prisoners, and in part an animal sanctuary where there would be animal therapy, where people would be involved with animals who are not going to be killed. Would that be a good goal?
I mean, I'm not that interested in entering into this debate of like what program should be the program that comes out of this situation. I think the situation is somewhat corrupted to the point that I honestly have just put my attention elsewhere, in part because I'm just not interested in lobbying the government. I don't think people build their capacity to win real victories that represent their own goals through doing that. And I think a vegetable farm and animal therapy would be just as, like, probably better than a farm that's producing milk for a global corporation to then process and export. But I don't think it's necessarily good. I mean, it would depend on what it looked like. And I also just am more interested in the collective struggle of prisoners to improve their working conditions than I am in the specific question of what kind of work is the most rehabilitative, because I think that's a bit of a trap. Like, I think it, you always end up justifying prisons when you enter into debate on those terms.
Sure, but you're saying you got involved in the Prison Farms campaign and you would do it again if it was progressing to the point where that people might use direct action to win their goals directly. If Evolve Our Prison Farms becomes a direct action campaign that's using tactics that you have skills at and defend to achieve the goal of an animal sanctuary and fresh vegetables for prisoners, would you join that campaign as well?
It's a good question. I hadn't really considered that they would, that they have that capacity. I'm not familiar enough with their campaign to be able to say definitively whether I would put myself on the line to support their goals. But yeah, if they're building a mass movement for this thing, I would consider it.
Do you think a mass movement around prison issues would be possible? Like, say, around prison work, something that you would genuinely support and want to defend?
I think if you look at the United States over the last couple of years, there have been a couple moments. There's been a national prison strike in September 2016. That was under the banner of End Prison Slavery, and it was it didn't articulate very specific demands about that, but it was generally, you know, a national strike called for by prisoners to refuse to work in the service of either the prison or the private sector that's exploiting prisoners for their labor. So yeah, I would definitely support that if something like that came along here. Or I do support that in the United States. You know, what is a mass movement? But there's something happening in the U.S. right now that is calling for the abolition of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which has been sort of sparked by revelations around family separation and the Trump crackdown on immigrants coming into the country. But has people have, you know, been occupying ICE offices in the United States or occupying the land outside of those offices and calling for the abolition of ICE. And some people are even pushing that to the abolition of the police or any kind of enforcement mechanism that is related to immigration enforcement. I think there's tons of space for anarchists to bring their perspectives to something like that. And yeah, it's not anarchy, but life isn't this neat kind of thing where you only do something if it's perfect. I think you know, things like that are great examples of spaces that anarchists can interject their ideas and build capacity within.
What are some of the things that you think you got out of your involvement in the Prison Farms campaign? What are the positive results?
It's funny to call this a positive result, but I learned about some things that don't work. One thing that I learned doesn't work is expecting people to support radical ideas or projects when they're not radicals. I mean, I learned a little bit about blockade tactics and nonviolent civil disobedience. There were several events where people experimented in escalation. So, you know, one day there was blockades of all the Correctional Service of Canada parking lots in the downtown area of Kingston. And I thought that was a good example of how we could participate in a coalition, because what we did is we just agreed to take two driveways, like as the radicals or whatever, and organize our own blockades. And we had a very, like, we had a hard picket, basically. We didn't let any vehicles in or out, and it was really solid and felt really good. And it built our own kind of trust and capacity, both internally with everyone else at that parking lot, but also with the campaign. Whereas some of the other parking lots, there was a big debate about whether to let a police car through and that kind of thing. I learned a lot about the prison system. It was, for me, an entry point into doing work with EPIC, and I think EPIC has been a worthwhile project in terms of relationship building with prisoners, developing an analysis of the prison, and all the things that EPIC has done over the years.
Is there anything else you want to say before we turn it off?
I guess the only thing I would add is that, yeah, I am critical of the quote-unquote victory that is being claimed by the Prison Farms campaign. It doesn't mean that I think we should have never engaged with the Prison Farms campaign, or that I think everyone who's in the Prison Farms campaign is a bad person. I wouldn't want it to be taken that way. What I want to say is that we should be questioning what is victory as anarchists, like those of us who have a fundamental critique of prison and the state, and how do we continue to advance that, and what does victory look like for us when we do this kind of organizing? It's very all or nothing, and we do shy away from demands, and even minuscule demands are very difficult to win in when it comes to prisoners. It's a population of people who, when they collectively organize, experience an extreme amount of repression for even the smallest shows of defiance. So you do always end up engaging with the question of demands all the time, and I don't think we should not ever engage with the question of demands. It's more like, what do we consider a victory? And for me, a victory looks like building up a collective capacity to struggle against the state.